Good afternoon and welcome back to In the Corner, episode 18. It's been a while since I've done a podcast. It's been 5 days. You know, this weekend I was out of town. It was really hard to stay updated on all the fights. You know, I think that this weekend I was able to watch the Caterar Barboza main card, and I was able to watch Baranchuk versus Keyshawn the morning after it went down. But other than that, I had to catch up on everything, and so I was able to watch the rest of the top-ranking matchroom cards, watch the whole Golden Boy card and the whole UFC card. So I'm finally up to date on everything. You know, we've had a lot of good news over the past few days. We're going to break down all the big fights, all the big news, and we're going to look a little bit ahead to what is going to be potentially the biggest fight week of 2025, at least the best fight card and the biggest fight card of all time. I cannot wait for Saturday. We've been, you know, waiting for this February 22nd date before we even knew what fight was going to be on it. We just heard Riyadh building this huge February 22nd card. I'm not going to talk about it too much because on Thursday's episode, we're going to do a big preview show. We're also going to talk about the breaking news. That is, Shakur Stevenson and Floyd Schofield is off. So let's get right into it. We're actually going to start with that big piece of breaking news that came out earlier today. So earlier in the day, we noticed that Floyd Schofield was not present for the grand arrivals. And this was a little bit odd because, you know, he's in town, he's in Riyadh, all the fighters are there, you're kind of required to be there, and he wasn't, which was, you know, a lot of people were like, huh, why is he no-showing? Then we see that Floyd Schofield Sr. tweeted that, oh, Shakur's team has poisoned our, you know, Floyd's massage and stuff. So apparently Floyd Schofield had a massage, and they used some cream or whatever, and they think that it was poisoned by Shakur's team, and, you know, he's feeling ill from it. So, you know, at that point, it was like, all right, this is kind of odd. That's why he wasn't at the Grand Arrivals. Hopefully, he'll still fight, whatever. Didn't really pay too much attention to it. Not too much. It was a little bit, definitely a little bit worrying. But I didn't think that he would have to pull out. A lot of people were saying, oh, maybe he's looking to make the way. We know that the BBBFC has a Wednesday check-in midweek, you know, to make sure that you're on track to make weight. Maybe he decided, hey, I'm not going to go to the Grand Arrivals. I really need to lock in and make weight. That's not the case. We now know that he's fallen ill, and the doctor has pulled him from the fight. He will not be competing on Saturday. And I'm not going to lie, this does suck because I kept thinking, I was like, hopefully we get to February 22nd. Ever since this card was announced in early December, like, hopefully we can get there with no pullouts and just a perfect, perfect card. And it was too good to be true. In fact, I was just thinking about it the other day, like, wow, we've made it to fight week and all the fights are still going ahead right now. And obviously, something has to happen. This is boxing. I think that if any of the fights were to fall through, this is both the best and the worst fight to happen. In terms of why it's the worst, this was the only one where I felt like there was genuine, you know, heat there. And the guys didn't like each other. I think that Dubois and Parker have, you know, a little bit of animosity, but they still like each other. And Baturbia and Bivol is the same story. They have a rivalry. They didn't want to shake hands. You know, they're fighting each other, but I think there's also definitely some respect there. Shakur and Floyd do not like each other straight up. And Floyd Schofield was not at the presser in January, so we didn't get to see them go back and forth then. So it was really hopeful this was going to be the fight where we get to see some good trash talk. Floyd is now injured. He's unfit. He's unwell. He will not be competing, and, you know, this sucks. However, it's the best fight to fall through because this was the only one that was not 50-50 or at least 60-40. I think that Floyd Schofield's a good fighter. I don't think he's ready for a world title shot. I definitely don't think that he's ready to get in the ring with someone like Shakur Stevenson, who is just a great. So, you know, it's not the worst thing to happen, but it does kind of suck just because I was excited for this fight, and this was going to be, I thought Floyd would pose some challenges for Shakur, but nothing he wouldn't be able to handle. Now, we're hearing that the potential for what Shakur could fight next, there are two options, and those are a potential fight with the Moroccan Moussa Ghoulam, who I'm just going to be straight up, I've never heard of him, or Josh Padley, who upset Mark Chamberlain in Wembley in September. So I think that some people are saying, oh, like, these guys are going to have to travel to Riyadh. Like, they're not going to get there till Friday. They got to make 135, which the weight issue is definitely there. How are they going to make 135 in, you know, just a few days? And I don't even know if Josh Padley is naturally 135 because he fought Mark Chamberlain at 140, if you remember. And I thought that was kind of odd. And I assumed, oh, this is probably because Padley is a 140-pounder. Chamberlain is a 135-pounder. So Chamberlain just came up or whatever. But Apparently, Paddy maybe is actually still a lightweight. So regardless, the reason why I think that these two names are the ones who are going to get the who are being discussed to have the fight is that I think that they may be in Riyadh already, and they may be close to the weight. They maybe were planning fights soon and are going to be able to make 135 by Friday weigh-in. So in terms of these fights, I mean, neither of these are Shakur fights at all. They're both terrible mismatches. He will absolutely destroy them. In fact, he may be able to stop them. The only issue with him stopping anyone, the only issue with him stopping someone of this caliber is his hands. We know that he does not have good hands. He just had surgery. He just had them injured, you know. And he even said that he doesn't think he can fight more than twice a year just with the state of his hands and, you know, how injury-prone and how fragile they are. So I don't know if he's really capable of knocking someone out with, you know, the actual pillow fists. So, you know, we'll see. But I would definitely rather see Josh Padley. I think that he's a tougher fight. I think he's a better fight, and I think he's a more well-known opponent. If he fights Gollum, I think was his name, everyone's going to be like, oh, come on, like, what is this? If he fights Josh Padley, people are like, okay, this is a bad mismatch, but I know Josh Padley. He beat Mark Chamberlain, you know? So there's a little bit more, okay, yeah, let's see this. And one opportunity for Josh Padley with that big win in September. So we'll see what happens. I expect that we'll get an announcement probably tomorrow on who Shakur's opponent will be. I'm a little bit surprised that they're actually looking for an opponent. I think it's just because they really want to preserve this 7-fight huge card. They don't want to pull a fight from it because, I mean, Shakur is so good. You don't really want to pull in an opponent on 4 days' notice, you know, because what threat are they going to be? And that's still the case. But I understand why they want to push forward and why they want to get a new fighter in there. I'll tell you this right now. If this is a non-title fight, if this is a lesser card, if this is a lesser magnitude, they don't look for a new opponent. Not on 4 days' notice. Yeah, so let's get into what was probably the biggest story of the weekend, and that is Keyshawn Davis of Norfolk, Virginia, is now the WBO lightweight champion of the world. And wow, what a performance it was. So, as we all know, Keyshawn is a young fighter. This was only his 14th pro fight, and he was able to lock down a world title shot and completely outclass and embarrass Barinchuk, if I'm being honest. So going into this fight, I was like, okay, I think it's 65-35 is probably what I'd say the odds were for Keyshawn. I thought Keyshawn was totally a favorite, but not by a wide margin. I thought Barinchuk was very good. We just saw him, you know, beat Navarrete in May of 2024, and he looked very good. And I thought that this was going to be a tough fight, and Barinchuk is a guy that a lot of people overlook. So, and I think that was kind of happening. Not from Keyshawn, but from a lot of boxing fans. And he went in there and just totally just looked like made Barinchuk look like he was not even a, like, I don't even know what level. But he made him look like he was so lower of a level and just totally embarrassed him in there. The first two rounds were, you know, not a lot happened. Very slow, but Keyshawn, you know, very good, measured, precise performance. He was able to keep his emotions out of the ring when it was a very emotional fight week. Not only is it his first world title shot, but the racist packages he was being sent. So we didn't know, you know, how much was Keyshawn going to go in there angry and just trying to take this guy's head off. But it seems he was able to control himself, measure himself. He was very precise. He was doing a really good job of, you know, timing Barinchuk and just landing these shots, you know, and just, like, you know, definitely getting his better foot forward and winning these rounds. And then in round three, he lands a body shot that sends Barinchuk down. As soon as he does that, it's like, okay, he's figured him out already. He was calculating, he's figured him out, and he's going to put Barinchuk down. And fourth round, that's exactly what happens. Brutal body shot. Barinchuk does not meet the count, and Keyshawn becomes a world champion in just four rounds. He gets an undefeated Olympian. My God, what a performance. Keyshawn genuinely may be the next big American star. This was only his 14th pro fight. Think of it. Lightweight, super lightweight, welterweight. Maybe even super welterweight. He's already probably one of the bigger names of the fighters there. He's got so many big fights that are around him. The Andy Cruz fight is a good rivalry. You've got Tank Davis, which would be awesome. Loma, Raymond Murataya, Frank Martin. Those are all the 135 fights. Yeah, Shakur, but they're not going to fight. Then, I mean, if you look ahead to 140, I mean, Teofimo Lopez, they've got some good beef there. That would be awesome. And there's a lot of other guys at 140 that he could get in there with. I mean,
And I don't think anybody would be afraid to see a Ryan Garcia or a Devin Haney fight. I mean, a Pitbull Cruz, he says he wants to fight him. I mean, there are so many names in that 135, 140, 147 divisions. And, you know, that's probably where the hotspot of American fighters are at the moment. And Keyshawn is now, for a while, he was, you know, a contender. He was being built up, rising star. And it kind of felt like, you know, we're talking about, oh, Keyshawn versus these guys. I'm like, yeah, but he's not. He hasn't reached that level yet. Not that he wouldn't be able to, but like he's just in his career, you know, he's not fighting for titles yet. He's now a world champion out of nowhere. Not out of nowhere, but just kind of like, wow, he's already there. And now we get to, I'm like, wow, we get to actually start having discussions about these super fights. As for what's next for him, you know, I've been thinking about it a lot. And I was listening to the Ariel and Ade show today, and they mentioned Frank Martin. I'm like, you know what? That makes sense. That it makes is a very logical next fight. That's a good opponent that Keyshawn will win. I think that Frank Martin and Edwin De Los Santos were in conversations for a fight. I'm not sure if that's still happening. I think that was supposed to happen in March on a PBC card, but that's definitely not happening in March. So I don't know if that's still the plan. I like that fight as well. Winner of that fight's Keyshawn. I'd like to see a unification with him. I think Loma would be good, but I think that Loma is going to retire, and even if he doesn't, he's going to have to fight the winner of Muratiyah Abdullayev. If Tank decides, you know what, screw it, I'm going to retire this year, give me a big fight. Give me Davis versus Davis. Give me Tank versus the businessman. I need to see that. It's a brilliant fight. I mean, there's so many big options for him. He looks so sensational in there. This guy is going to be a big star for American boxing. I think he may be the next superstar. Let's talk about what else was on that card. We had the Xander Zayas in the co-main, who had an interesting performance, very good performance in terms of, you know, totally dominated the previously undefeated Slava Spomer, you know, was able to stop him in round 9, I believe also with a body shot, you know, just looked really good, totally dominating. He's exciting to watch, but I think we're starting to realize he doesn't really have a lot of pop. He doesn't have a lot of power that a lot of the guys in the 154 division have, which, you know, it's something you really need because 154 is the most stacked division, in my opinion. He's in there with a ton of killers. And for him especially, like, he needs to be upgraded because this is, like, the third or fourth fight in a row where it's just been, like, 100-90 against former world champion, undefeated contender-level fighters. You know, like, it's time to move up. He is way too good for these guys. He's not stopping them, but I think we're seeing that he doesn't really have a ton of power. So, you know, at least we need to get him in there. He's ready for 12 rounds, and he's ready for a title eliminator. I like the Josh Kelly fight. I think that's a really good fight. You know, Josh Kelly's somebody that's also been looking for a fight. Both of them are kind of a little bit outside of the title talks, you know, where we hear a lot about a lot of these big names at 154 pounds, these guys that have already been world champion, already been fighting at that level. Zayas and Kelly are kind of looking to push their name into the door. Josh Kelly was supposed to fight Liam Smith. That didn't happen. Kind of lost his shot at the world stage. Xander Zayas was potentially going to get the Virgil Ortiz fight. That didn't happen. Now, I think it's really time for both those guys to fight, or for Zayas to fight anyone big. We know that the plan is likely Puerto Rican parade weekend in New York City at the beginning of June. He'll probably headline at the theater again there, you know. But listen, he's a great fighter. I would just like to see him step up in competition. The other fight on the ESPN main card was Vito Melnicki Jr. and Connor Coyle. This was maybe my fight of the weekend. It was so entertaining. It was great. The gripe with it is that it was a draw. And I'm sorry, but this fight was not a draw. Vito Melnicki won that. I had him winning 7-3. Were a lot of those rounds close? Yeah, but you definitely think that Melnicki cleared enough of them to get the win. I thought that he looked a lot stronger, a lot better at 160. I thought that, you know, if Coyle was somebody who was a little bit smarter of a fighter, a little bit more consistent, then he could have won that fight and beaten some good guys. Because, you know, I think it was round 3 and 4 where Coyle was just, his volume was just unbelievable, and he was able to just hurt and you know, just frustrate Melnicki. And, you know, I mean, like, Melnicki didn't really have a lot to answer with that. He was kind of getting touched up a lot. And then Coyle backed off. So if Coyle was able to recognize, hey, I'm doing really good with this volume, I need to keep up the volume, he could have won that fight. He still remains undefeated, but I definitely think that he lost. It was a really good fight. I definitely like Melnicki moving up to 160. I wanted to see him and Zayas last year. But, you know, I think that it definitely shows that Melnicki is better at middleweight. So I'm excited to see who they do next. I wouldn't be mad at a rematch just because there's a really fun fight to watch, but I also don't think that one's necessary because I think that everybody's kind of accepted that Melnicki is the better fighter. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what else was on this card, on the undercard. Jared Anderson looked awful. He looked so bad. I don't know what was going on with him, but he even got hurt in the first round against Marios Kolias. He looked like he was so disinterested. He didn't want to be there. You know, I mean, I really, really want to know what was going through his head. And I got to know, what does this guy want out of the sport? Because it doesn't seem like he wants to have this, you know, insane legacy and to put on all these great fights and to be a world champion, because he had a tough loss to Bacoli, but it was just because it was too early in his career. You can learn from that, but he didn't learn from that. And just kind of went through the motions in there, and he totally dominated, but he didn't even stop Kolias. I mean, what's going on with him? Like, he looked like he didn't learn anything, you know, still looked, he was just totally disinterested, not listening to his trainer. I mean, he's a very frustrating fighter he's becoming, because he was the great American hope for the heavyweight division. And now it seems like that hope is dissipating after the Bacoli loss and after a performance like that. I mean, do you really want this or no, man? So I don't know. Who else? Abdullah Mason looked incredible yet again. You know, a better performance from him this time. He was in there with a much tougher opponent, Manuel Jaime, somebody who took Rolly Romero the distance in September. But Mason had a slower start. You know, still fighting well, but he wasn't trying to rush in there and get caught. He's very calculated. Drops Jaimez in the third round, and then again on the fourth round. Just a dangerous, dangerous fighter. He also dropped him in the second round. But, I mean, this guy is just, he is probably the prospect of the year for 2025, not 2024. I hate that he didn't get prospect of the year last year. I'm kidding. He's not prospect of the year yet, but I think that he probably will be, if he's even still a prospect by the end of the year. But, I mean, he's just so sensational. He looks so good. I saw a rumor that his next fight will likely be April 5th on the Richard Torres Guido Vianello fight, which we're going to talk about later. That's insane. But against Giovanni Cabrera. Wow, what a step up. This Cabrera, he went the distance with Pitbull Cruz in a pretty good fight and then was stopped by William Zepeda. But I think his only loss has come to Pitbull and Zepeda. That is elite level competition. Now he's going to go in there and he's going to fight Abdullah Mason. I have to assume this is probably a 10-rounder now. I think that Abdullah Mason is that good. I mean, I'm shocked that they're throwing him in this early, but I mean, go for it. There's no time to waste. He's there. He's had 17 fights. It's time for him to step up. I'm just surprised that they're putting him in with somebody that, you know, world champion, guys who are about to get world champion shots, you know, before they got their world title shot or interim title shot, whatever. They were in with Giovanni Cabrera. Now Mason is in with them, so it's crazy. Juanmita Lopez de Jesus had a brilliant first-round knockout, scary knockout. That was his pro debut. I'm excited to see this guy fight some more. He's very good. Really exciting future. Rohan Polanco, second-round TKO, first fight at welterweight. He is one of my favorite fighters to watch on these top-ranked cards. He's so good. I would like to see the Brian Norman fight. I'm not even kidding. Do I think that Polanco is necessarily front of the queue for a world title shot at 147? No. But Norman, you know, I think Polanco's decently rated with the WBO. They're both under top rank. And he called out Norman. And I think that's a fight that Norman, honestly, I don't know if Norman wins that. Or at least it's a close fight. And it's probably a fight that Norman will take over unification or a tougher opposition. So, yeah, I have no objections to that fight. Keon Davis had a good second-round knockout. You know, looks very promising. The younger brother of Keyshawn. Yeah, I'm really excited to see him. I think he's 6'4", 6'3" is a welterweight, which is nuts. But yeah, Nico Ollie Walsh, I don't even really have much to say. I'm just kind of disappointed. I know that he doesn't have to be the same level as his grandpa, who's obviously the GOAT, but I don't know, because it seems like he does genuinely want to be a world champion, and he wants to fight. He trains hard, but it's just that he can't even beat these guys in 6-rounders. You know, that's 2 now that he's lost. He just beat, I think his name was Akale, in June to, you know, avenge his first loss. Next fight, loses again. And it's just because he just doesn't know how to get things going. And he doesn't know when he's losing and how to change that and how to improve his game. And I don't know, man. I really don't know. But he's now, I think, 10-2 or 11-2. You know, and before this, I was saying he needs to move up to 8-rounders. You know, he's been at 6 rounders too long, but he can't even get out of 6 rounders without losing. So, Yeah, I don't really know what the plan is for him. I wouldn't be surprised if Top Rank drop him. The only reason they have him is because of his last name, which sucks because I really like Nico Ollie-Walsh. I think he's a good speaker. I like him when he commentates the Top Rank cards, but I just don't know if he has it. So the other big fight that happened this weekend was Jack Catterall, Arnold Barboza Jr. in Manchester. Very interesting fight. So we entered this fight, and, you know, I had been saying, I was like, look, y'all, do not underestimate Barboza. He definitely has the upset in him. But it wasn't until after the fight that I realized, yeah, I thought that Catterall would win, and I had Barboza, you know, but Barboza as a serious underdog there, and not serious in that he's a big underdog, but serious as in you have to take him seriously. I thought this fight was like 60-40. Or more so 55-45, but I didn't realize that. I really just didn't even imagine the scenario where Barboza won. The whole time, I was just thinking about Catterall winning, and I didn't even realize until afterwards. I was like, wow, Barboza won? And it's just nuts because, you know, I mean, Jack Catterall had been looking for his world title shot for so long, so many good wins. I was like, okay, he's finally going to get it after this one. Every fight for the last three fights has been, next fight's going to be a world title shot. And he's not getting him. And then he gets an interim title shot, and he loses. A very, very close decision, mind you. And listen, this fight, upon first watch, I wasn't super locked in, I'm going to be honest. And it wasn't a very exciting fight, which I knew it was going to be. I knew it was going to be a boring fight. But it was really hard to score overall. Like, seriously, I think every round you could have gone either way. I think that definitely in the latter half of the fight, Barboza did more to impress. And, you know, I think that Barboza was just able to be more effective. And I think that Catterall punched harder. I think that early on he hit some shots that really, really affected Barboza. But it seemed like Barboza was getting better and not getting hit and landing good shots on Catterall. And yeah, I wasn't mad that he got the decision. I was just kind of surprised just because I didn't expect it. I thought it was so close that I honestly expected a draw or, you know, it was in the UK for it to go to Catterall. However, push comes to shove, I do think that Catterall deserved, or Barboza deserved it more. But very interesting fight. You know, they're both kind of counter punchers and, you know, defensive. And so I fight off the back foot. So I expected it to not be very exciting, which it wasn't. But a decent high level fight. As for what's next for Barboza, I mean, this guy, he just keeps on to upset. And like, I don't even know who you put him in with next. Obviously, he's mandatory for Teofimo Lopez. I don't know if that happens because I think that, you know, I don't know if Tio's ever going to defend the WBO belt again. I think he's going to – if Barboza fights Teofimo, it will be in June at Alcatraz because they're either going to be able to get that unification over the line with Richardson Hitchens, or if they don't, Tio's going to have one more fight at junior welterweight. And that would likely be against his mandatory Arnold Barboza Jr., which I like that fight. And that's a fight that, again, you can't really count Barboza out of. Otherwise, I think that, say Tio fights Hitchens or somebody else, I think that Tio's only fighting at 140 one more time, meaning that Barboza is likely to get upgraded to full champion. Once he does, I think there's a lot of names for him to fight. He could unify, but I would like to see an in-house fight with Oscar Duarte, which we'll talk about in a minute. However, I thought about it some more. There's maybe a fight that I'd prefer more for Oscar Duarte, but Duarte did call out Barboza. I think that's a good fight for Golden Boy to make. It's an in-house fight, clash of styles. That's a really big fight that they can make, and I really enjoy it. Also on this matchroom card, we had Reese Bilotti beating up Michael Gomez Jr. This is why I was very interested to see what was going to happen. You know, Bilotti has been in very good form recently, but he's also older and had a lot of defeats. Michael Gomez Jr. has been a decent enough prospect and British contender, but, you know, nothing special. And Bilotti just totally outclassed him and beat him up and was able to stop him, I believe, it was in the 10th round. You know, just clinical performance. I think that Eddie Hearn said that next up for Bilotti is probably European level, which makes sense because, I mean, they keep on – I think he's fought three British title fights now, and they've all been, you know, very good. The Liam Dillon fight was a fantastic fight, and it was close, but he definitely deserved the win. Who did he fight? I think he fought someone in July, and I thought that it was a total domination, you know, so definitely needs to be fighting at a higher level there. And then he fights Michael Gomez, and again, dominates him and even stops him. So, yeah, I don't really know if there's much left for
Pilate at British level, but you know, he's a very exciting fighter to watch. I'd like to see them push for him to get a European title shot. Pat McCormack beat up Robbie Davies Jr. after the sixth round. Davies had to retire. Good call from them, from the corner, I believe it was. It was just, I mean, very good performance. I think he dropped him twice. He dropped him twice in the third round, again in the fifth round, and then after the sixth round, they call it quits. Pat McCormack is a very, very good prospect, and he's somebody that I was excited to see, or that I knew would be good, but I wasn't sure how excited I was to watch him. He had a fight in October, I believe it was, and it was just really, really boring. He totally dominated his opponent, but that's not what I want to see. I want to see exciting fights. This was an exciting performance, and I'm excited to see what he does next. He was also an eliminator for the British title. I think the British champion right now is Kona Walker. They're welterweights, so I like that fight a lot. And that British 147 is getting really interesting. I would not mind the Kona Walker to fight Pat McCormack at all. I think Pat McCormack will beat him, and I hate to say that because I really like Kona Walker, but I think it's a really good fight. Zelpha Barrett lost to James Dickens. This was really surprising. You know, this was meant to be a tough fight for Barrett, but one that he should get past and potentially go into April and fight Ray Ford, and or to, you know, they really were talking about getting Barrett a world title shot, maybe a British title shot, but like a world title shot. He was in discussions to fight Shakur in October, which made no sense because he's not a 135 pounder. But you know, this fight was just for Barrett to come in after 10 months, have a good fight, get some rounds in, gets a decent opponent, and win. And that's not what happened. It was a close fight, don't get me wrong, but Dickens just started to take over throughout the fight, and actually wasn't that close overall. I had him winning 97-93, but it was just really odd, and Barrett just looked awful. He looked like he just couldn't get anything going. And hey, good performance from Jazza Dickens, so excited to see what they do with him next, and excited to see what they do with Barrett next, because I was really hoping to see Barrett win and him fight Ray Ford in April. But that's not happening. Connor Tudsbury had a very good win. Pro debut, second round TKO. This kid looks dangerous. He's at 175 pounds, I believe. You know, real good fighter. I expect him to be, you know, something really special for Matchroom. I really like, I like seeing the British prospects who are dangerous and go for it. And that was what we saw with him. And he's going to be back out March 28th, and yeah, nothing bad to say. Fantastic performance. I like that he just goes out there and he goes for it. Somebody does the same thing as William Krolla, who had a first-round TKO. You know, again, very, very good fighter. He's also back out March 28th. Really exciting British prospect to watch. I need more like of these guys, you know, who go in there with the intent to kill, and they're powerful. They're so powerful. Krolla is a very powerful fighter, and they just catch their guys and they go for it. You know, somebody that I was actually really impressed with was Akib Fiaz, who returned after over a year out of the ring, you know, in a six-rounder and talking about wanting to fight the winner, Bilotti Gomez. And, you know, I think he's somebody who had, I think, 11, 12, 13 wins, something like that, and two stoppages. Luckily, he was able to make that three tonight, or not tonight, but this weekend. Guy out of there, Alfie Middlemiss, had his pro debut. He looked very good. Through four rounds, decision, but an exciting four rounds. So really good card of the Co-op Live, which is definitely very quickly becoming the home of British boxing. Manchester in general is getting a lot of fights as of recent. Let's talk about this UFC card. Not a ton to talk about. The main event I thought was really, really good. I think that Jared Cannonier was not expecting him to win after, I think, a two-fight losing streak. You know, he's in there with Gregory Rodriguez. RoboCop, he's a much bigger guy, who is unranked and is wanting to take Cannonier's ranking from him. And in the first round, it looked like that was what was going to happen. Rodriguez dropped Cannonier. Every shot he was landing was just blistering and so powerful and causing so much damage. And it was like, wow, this guy's going to be a force in the middleweight division. And then tires super quickly. And Cannonier slowly but surely just starts putting on his own stuff together. And second round, takes it. Very dominant. Third round, back and forth a little bit, but I'm leaning towards Rodriguez until the last 30 seconds where Cannonier elbows him and hurts him and drops him, and then it just explodes on him. It seems like he's going to get the finish. Doesn't quite get it. As soon as the fourth round gets started, Rodriguez still has nothing with him, and Cannonier just gets it done very quickly. Super good performance. I was very excited to see that from Jared Cannonier. I think he's a really exciting fighter to watch. You know, this is a really exciting main event. On an otherwise okay card, I thought, co-main event was Calvin Kattar and Yusuf Zalal. I thought Zalal had a very good performance in those first two rounds, and the third round's kind of, you know, laid off a little bit, and Calvin Kattar started to put it together his own stuff and started to gain some confidence, but just a little bit of a too little too late. And I thought Zalal had a good performance, but I think it was a very exciting fight. Edmund Shahbazyan had a brilliant first-round TKO over Dylan Butka. That was really exciting to watch. He's a guy I'm going to keep my eyes on, 185 pounds. You had the Bonfim brothers have, you know, difficult and good nights. I remember when Gabriel Bonfim was fighting Chaos Williams, he had a little bit of trouble getting started. You know, I gave Williams the first round, which I don't know if a lot of people did, but I did. And then just got a really good submission in round two, as opposed to his brother, Ismael Bonfim, who fought on the main card. And after the first round, was getting checked out by the doctors for a cut caused by Nazim Sadikov. And it's a little bit confusing because I think that he may have told the doctor, no, I'm good, I can see, but there's a problem with the translation. And they thought that he meant he couldn't see. So the fight gets canceled, or not canceled, but called off either way. And Nazim Sadikov is the winner by TKO after the first round because of the eye and not being able to see. But, yeah, I think that Bonfim was definitely pretty frustrated and still wanted to keep fighting. So not really sure what's going on there. But I thought it was a decent enough Apex card. I enjoyed it. Nothing too crazy happened. Good main event, but, you know, nothing to write home about either. Big Golden Boy card in Anaheim, headlined by Oscar Duarte versus Miguel Madueño. Duarte had a little bit of a slow start. I gave Madueño the first two rounds. You know, came in on 10 days' notice, I think, moved up in weight to 140. Looked very good. You know, was really hitting Duarte with some big shots, a lot of volume. And then after the second round, Duarte just said, all right, let's go. And then just started putting it on Madueño and looked brilliant. Really, really good stuff. Stops him in the seventh round. I mean, Oscar Duarte is becoming a very good fighter. He says all he wants is world titles. I don't know if he can win a world title. I don't know if he's that high level, especially at 140. But I think that he's definitely somebody that can be in some big fights at 140 pounds and challenge a lot of guys. So, you know, as we know, called out Arnold Barboza Jr. I like that fight a lot. I think that fight makes a lot of sense. He gets his world title shot in a way there. Potentially he does get the full world title shot if Barboza gets upgraded. However, a fight that I realized, like, you know what? This fight makes a lot of sense. These guys are both at 140. They're both guys that I don't know if they really necessarily deserve the title shot next, but would be great fights. Oscar Duarte versus Isaac Pitbull Cruz. My goodness. Give me that. All Mexican war. These guys, all they know is war. That fight will be better than Pitbull and Fierro. That fight will be unbelievable. Fight of the year written all over it. Please give me that. It's a brilliant fight, I think. Darius DFG Foljam had a great fourth round KO win over Winfred Harris Jr. Again, very, very good prospect. Really contender now, or at least rising star that Golden Boy Promotions has. He's got a regional belt with the WBA. You know, I think that there's a lot of big stuff coming for him at 168 pounds. He's very good. This year, they just need to develop him more, get him some good fights, some step up in competition. And then, to be honest, 2026, you can probably start to put him in some pretty good fights. I think he's that good. I think he's now 14-0 with 12 knockouts, so a big, heavy hitter. Yeah, really exciting to watch. Ricardo Sandoval beat up Salito Henderson over 10 rounds. You know, Henderson really didn't win. I had him winning, I think, one round. One of the judges had him winning two. The other one had him winning zero rounds. You know, I mean, it was whatever. I think that Sandoval looked good, but I think that he probably could have stopped him. I would have liked to see him press on the gears a little bit more, and I think he could have gotten a stoppage. But listen, Sandoval is top five in all four sanctioning bodies. 112 is not that deep, realistically. There's a lot of good fights being made in Japan. I think that Sandoval is knocking on the door of the world title, and it doesn't matter which sanction is. I know he's targeting the WBC, which may get a little bit more difficult just because that there's about to be a unified champion there with Akui and Taraji, where the WBC and WBA belts will be held by the same guy who's going to have two mandatories to fulfill. But, I mean, Sandoval needs to fight for the world title soon. I'd like to see that happen this year. Kenneth Sims Jr. and Kendo Castaneda. This was a very interesting fight. So, Sims, this fight was at welterweight. I don't know if Sims intends to stay at welterweight or what, but I had him winning this fight, but not as close as the judges or a lot of other people had him. I had him winning 96-94. I thought that Castaneda won some good rounds earlier on in the fight, and I had him winning round two and then the last three rounds, where Sims was definitely up, totally dominating, and I think that he just did the math in his court. He's like, okay, how many rounds have I won? Yeah, probably six or seven. Okay, I'm done. And then just took it off, and I'm like, hold on. That's not how you fight. Come on, get in there, do some stuff. And just Castaneda, I don't want to take it away from Castaneda. He just had a great few rounds at the end there and did really well. And, you know, I mean, gave Sims a lot of problems and actually seemed like he kind of hurt Sims, but Sims just wasn't doing anything. So disappointing from Sims. Good to see from Castaneda. That ended up being probably one of the best fights on the card just of how competitive it was, but disappointing from Sims for sure. Listen, if he does decide to stay at 140, it's a good thing that he didn't fight Oscar Duarte in the main event like I wanted them to do, because that would not have gone well for him at all. Joel Iriarte continues to be a brilliant prospect. Second round knockout. Honestly, I think that they said he said he's already going to move up to eight rounds. I don't blame him. You know, he's been mowing through all the competition at the weight he's at, but, you know, he's only had six fights, but he is so fun to watch. I love how they always open up the Golden Boy big main cards with him fighting. I will always tune in for the start of the card if he's fighting. I was tuning in anyways, but still. The prelims I thought were really good. Only one of the fights went the distance, and that was Gael Cabrera, who's a really fun fighter to watch anyways. You got guys like Yair Gallardo and Fabian Guzman had really good first-round knockouts. All the guys on the card, including who else fought, Kevin Gudino, Javier Meza, and Daniel Garcia, all turned in really good stoppage performances. Golden Boy is an incredible stable of young fighters. They've got some of the best prospects in American, Mexican boxing. You know, just a lot of really good young talent where they're going to keep on developing these guys. And in a few years, I think they're all going to be pretty high level and, you know, title contention. You know, because we won't have a chance to before the next episode. But tomorrow night, Wednesday, there will be a ProBox TV card in California. It'll be headlined by Gabriel Flores Jr. and Jose Arellano. Should be a decent fight at lightweight. You've got Emiliano Moreno and Cesar Francis in the co-main event at welterweight. And then the fight that's getting a good amount of traction, looks like it'll be a lot of fun, is DeMichael Harris and Anthony Cuba, eight rounds in the lightweight division. They got into it at the weigh-in. I mean, this looks like it's going to be another fun card. Pro Box, I love watching their events. They're so much fun to watch. It seems like they're doing another Wednesday night fight. This is their first one of the year, but they're really trying to break away from it. I like the Wednesday night fights. I like watching it on the weekends more, but I don't like the idea of Pro Box always trying to get in there in the competition to fight for Saturday night fights, because the fact of the matter is they simply just don't have the roster, you know, to really do big Saturday night events, especially, you know, when you're going up against UFC pay-per-views like they've done. They did it February 8th. They're going to do it again March 8th. It just doesn't make sense. But yeah, good card tomorrow night. You know, I'm excited to see that one. Yeah, let's talk about some news. So, got a good amount of stuff. I'll try and move through it quickly because it's becoming a long episode, I'm worried. Yeah, let's just get right into it. Garcia Romero, Haney Ramirez is going to be completely free in Times Square. You won't need a ticket or anything. You can just walk up and watch it. I'm so excited to see how this is going to go. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be a crazy sight. I think it makes sense to make it free to watch just because it's going to be really hard to put that on anyway. It's going to make it a lot harder to have like a ticketed, you know, security and all this stuff. You know, let's just try and make it simple. It also seems like it's only going to be a three-fight card, which I have no objections with. It seems like it's going to be these two fights and F.A. Ajagba taking on Martin Bacoli, you know, which I don't mind at all. Those are three great fights given to me. I don't need a ton of prelims. It's going to be a fun Friday night in New York City. The night before, Canelo fights William Scull in Riyadh, so crazy. His Excellency is literally doing two cards in one week, and I can't believe it, but, you know, very interesting. Speaking of His Excellency, this is something related to him. The WBA are open to trialing 15-round fights for Undisputed. Now, this came from Teofimo Lopez, who said, oh, they should do 15-round fights for big fights, Undisputed fights. And the WBA said, hey, we're open to experimenting with that. His Excellency, thankfully, put his foot down and said, I don't support this one bit. I think it's a bad idea. I totally agree with him. They got rid of 15 rounds for a reason.
It is dangerous. We don't need it. 12 rounds is long enough. Nothing good will come out if we start doing 15 rounds again. And the good thing about His Excellency not wanting it is that he's honestly the guy who calls the shots. I know he's not the sanctioning body, but the sanctioning body is listening to him. So luckily, it looks like that will not be happening. This is kind of funny. Dylan Danis and Eddie Hall almost fought in MMA. I believe this was going to be on Misfits MMA, which I know we know that they're trying to get set up for this year. And I think that the reason why they said this couldn't happen was because the commission wouldn't allow such a big weight difference, which I can see why. I don't know why they were going to do this. I think it's just because, I don't know, Dylan Danis likes doing the, you know, likes drawing in attention, and that would definitely do it by having a Eddie Hall MMA fight. But, I mean, the one thing that Dylan Danis is good at is wrestling, which it's going to be, I know you're a good wrestler, but you're in there with a guy who's, what, 300 pounds? He's literally twice your size. I don't know how successful you're going to be. So, I don't know. Erickson Lubin has announced that he will headline in Orlando at in his hometown May 10th on Pro Box TV. This will, of course, be the Ardriel Holmes Jr. IBF Super Welterweight Eliminator fight. It'll be at the Silver Spurs Arena, which has 10,000 seating capacity. So this should be, again, a very big fight for Pro Box, probably their biggest one yet. I love the Lubin and Holmes fight. You know, I think it's a really competitive fight. So I think the winner of that deserves a world title shot. I don't know. But the winner of that fight's Murtaz Aliyev. I won't complain at all. I think this is a really good fight. I know they're going to do a big fight in the co-main event, Darrell Valsaint against somebody good. I can't remember who it's going to be, but yeah, I'm really excited to see this fight. This fight is one that you can put on a Saturday night. That's a real good boxing card. You know, not some of these other ones. Not that Pro Box cards aren't good. They're awesome. I love the Pro Box cards, but they're not as big name, top level fights as this next one is about to be. Dalton Smith is officially mandatory for the WBC Super Lightweight World Championship. So the winner of Alberto Pueyo and Sandor Martin on March 1st, he will be mandatory against them. I don't know if he's going to be ordered, especially not if it is Martin that wins. It'll be voluntary. It'll probably be voluntary either way because Martin is an ordered fight by the WBC. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, this is cool that he's mandatory. Hopefully this encourages Adam Azim to take the Dalton Smith fight and we can get that one. But anyways, Dalton Smith looks like he'll get a world title shot probably end of this year, early next year. OTX 12 was announced for San Diego on March 22nd. I love overtime boxing. I think they're really fun. I live in the Atlanta area, so I've been to a few of their cards. I really, really dig their stuff. This card on March 22nd looks very good. Again, this is their first time on a Saturday, so that'll be interesting. The end of March is going to get really crowded on March 22nd and definitely March 29th. But on this card, you got Malik Montgomery, who's a very good knockout artist. The pro debut of Julius Juju Bio, who just signed with OTX and Top Rank. You know, big Olympian, big amateur, should be a very good prospect. Johnny Mansoor, who I believe is his cousin, also from San Diego. You know, he's very good as well. I think he's 3-0. Then you've got David Dynamite Lopez, again, very good prospect, really fun to watch. Kurt Scooby is going to be on this card. You know, he lost in April, but has come back since then and gotten himself a good fight. Hopefully we can see him versus Giovanni Marquez. That's a really good fight for OTX to make, but, you know, excited to see that he's back out. Dante Lane, who's honestly one of my favorite pro boxing prospects. He's had all of his wins by knockout, almost all in the first round. I think that he was finally pushed to the second round recently and he still knocked him out. But yeah, this looks like it'll be a really, really exciting card. You know, San Diego, I'm very excited to see how this one goes down. What else? Javier Torres versus Nicholas Walter is now the co-main event for Arnold Kagai versus Joe Gonzalez March 8th. Good fight. You know, as much as, again, like, I don't want these Pro Box cards on Saturday just because I don't want to have them clash with other fight cards, they're putting together some awesome fights, and they're doing big things in 2024. So I'm super excited to see – or 2025, excuse me. So I'm really excited to see, you know, how much they take off this year. Fight Deontay Wilder. He says he hits hard. I know I hit harder. Listen, make this fight. There's a lot of guys that I want to see fight in Africa. It's really Derek Chisora, Dillian White, Deontay Wilder, Francis Ngannou. I feel like they're all kind of at the same point in terms of like skill and level at this point in their respective careers. And I like the Chisora White trilogy, and I like the Wilder Ngannou fight. Give that one to me. That's an actual 50-50 fight. You actually may even favor Ngannou in that fight, but man, I need to see it. I love that. Darren Till versus Darren Stewart has been added to Misfits 21 on March 29th. This is probably the co-main event. You know, I like that they're going to – like that they, it seems like they've actually signed Darren Till and they're going to keep him active. Darren Stewart, former MMA fighter, you know, should be a decent fight, but one that Darren Till will win. Hopefully they'll get him a big fight after this one. I'd like to see KSI, even though that's not what they're going to do. We mentioned it earlier on today's show, but Richard Torres Jr. versus Guido Vianello has been announced for April 5th in Las Vegas. This is a very interesting fight. So Top Rank's big heavyweight American prospect was Jared Anderson. And once Jared Anderson lost, it's like, all right, well, who's the next undefeated hope? And I was thinking, well, probably Richard Torres. But he was fighting in 8 rounders, you know, not really time for him to step up. Seems that he said, no, I'm stepping up. You know, saying, oh, his reasoning was that people say, oh, he's fighting guys that everyone knows he's going to beat. And I'm like, yeah, you're a prospect. It's kind of the point. He's only had, I think, like maybe 10, 8, 9, 10, 11 fights. I can't remember, but it's something like that. Not that many. And he decided it's time for him to step up. And I don't hate it because, listen, Guido Vianello, this guy is very dangerous. You know, he lost to Efe Ajogba in a fight that I thought that he won. Then he fights Arslan Bakhmutov, fight that he does win in Stas Bakhmutov. It seems like Top Rank's trying to write him off but by giving him their other heavyweight talents, but he's just beating them or at least giving them really good fights. Listen, I love Richard Torres Jr. I think he's one of my favorite heavyweight prospects to watch, but Guido Vianello is a very, very tough fight. You know, he's a guy who always shows up and is in good form. You know, let's just see how this one goes, but hopefully he can pull it off. I'm excited. I think this is genuinely a 50-50 heavyweight fight on the same day as the White Joyce heavyweight card. So it's going to be a really awesome day for the heavyweights. Dos Santos Pitters has been rescheduled to April 4th on a GBM show in York Hall. This looks like it's going to be a really good show, actually. They just signed Huey Fury. Excuse me. You know, hopefully he'll be in it with a decent opponent, but I don't know if he will, but he'll be on that card as well. You've got Dolan Parker, that'll be for the British and Commonwealth super flyweight titles. You've got Crocker Bradley for the IBF European super lightweight title. Kieran Molloy is on that card as well. GBM is really moving up. That's a quality show on a Friday night in the UK. I really like that card. I'm excited for it. You know, hopefully they don't have as many pullouts as they did for their show in February, where the card at the end ended up being pretty lackluster. But, you know, I'm excited for that one. So we heard last week, that Bam Rodriguez and Puma Martinez were looking to try and get a super flyweight unification done. We're now hearing that Martinez Ioka 2 has been in negotiations and is close to being done for April 22nd. Obviously, it was meant to happen on New Year's Eve. Fell out of the hands at the last minute when Martinez got sick. You know, I was a little bit surprised he was able to get out of the rematch and, you know, just go move along, but it seems like that's not the case. They're looking to sign a fight for April 22nd. Which would be a Tuesday, I believe. So I won't complain because it's still two of the top guys at 115. I would just rather see a unification. Queensberry signed Aussie Olympian Charlie Sr. Interesting, they're signing an Australian. I think that Queensberry is gearing up to do something international with the zone. They're signing talent from more than just the UK, but it remains to be seen what they'll really do. Kubrat Pulev and Muhammad Char are in discussion. Are in discussions for a rematch April 26th in Dubai. Please let this not be the case. There are so many guys that are targeting Pulev's WBA regular world title just so that they can say they're world champion, one of those being Fabio Wardley, and that seems like the most likely one with him vacating the British. I would like to see that fight. I don't really have any interest in Pulev Char. Arsene Gulamirian versus Callum Johnson will be on the Janibek undercard on April 5th. I don't mind that one bit. I'm a little bit surprised that's happening, but it's a decent fight. I'm excited to see Gulamirian return. Interesting, the women's 125 flyweight PFL roster for the 2025 Global Tournament, or however it's called, was revealed today, and Dakota Dicheva is not on the list. Now, we heard that she was interested in the UFC, and we heard that she may not be fighting in this year's tournament, and that seems to be the case. I don't know if they're trying to get bigger fights for her. I really don't know who that would be, or if she is leaving the PFL to go to the UFC, because she's honestly maybe the face of the PFL outside of Francis Ngannou, because she is a tremendous fighter. you know, definitely probably top 10 pound for pound women's fighters. You know, the only other fighter that I'd say that PFL has in the top 10 pound for pound of all MMA is probably Francis Ngannou, you know, and even that's questionable. So, you know, we'll see what happens with her, but I thought it was very interesting that she's not on the roster. Speaking of women's fights, the BKFC, their two-day event in Dubai, their co-main events for both days will be the they will both be women's championship events. So on the first night, we'll have Hart versus Emery for the women's strawweight championship. And then the second day, we'll have Hannah Rankin versus Borga for the featherweight title. This is really interesting to me. You know, as you all remember, Hannah Rankin was a champion-level boxer in boxing and just recently made her transition to BKFC. You know, she fought on a big card. I think she fought on the Spain card in October. I didn't think that she looked overly great. I thought she may have lost her fight, but she got the win, and now she's already fighting for the title. So this is getting interesting. We're getting some more, you know, big names from other sports like boxing and MMA coming over and really taking BKFC seriously and fighting for titles there. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what happens there. Christian and Billy and Kevin Lele Saggio is off. Apparently what the deal was the IBF wanted it to be done by April 30th, and Saggio's promoter, I think it's Y12, are planning the fight for May 8th, and which would make it, I think, I can't remember what it was, but for some reason, and Billy and I, the Tiger, pulled him out because of financial reasoning or because he wouldn't be able to get the world title shot somehow. I really don't know. It was very confusing as to what happens, but sucks the fight's not happening, but they need to get Billy a title shot. It looks like they said they're planning for him to have a fight before the start of summer. You know, so that's good. I hope it's a good opponent because he really needs to be in with somebody at the top of 168. And they also said that his goal has always been the WBC route. And so we could see an eliminator with him and Diego Pacheco, which honestly may be the best fight at 168 not involving Canelo. So, yeah, really excited to see what happens with Christian and Billy. I'm a huge fan of his. All right, just a few more points before we wrap up today's episode. So, Frank Sanchez will return in a six-rounder on the Luis Neri and I think Kaiosuke Kameda card this Saturday on February 22nd in Mexico. I think that it's really weird because I want to see Frank Sanchez come back, but this is just so odd to me that he's on this random card. I actually like that he's on this card. It brings more spice to the card, more interest, but he's in with a guy who's 18 and 24, which this is the same thing as Deontay Wilder fighting Curtis Harper, which seems like it's no longer happening, thankfully. But I don't know. I feel like he'd be like, just because you lose doesn't mean you have to go all the way back down the roster. You know, I mean, even Jared Anderson's return fight was somebody who I think was like 17-2, 17-3, and I was kind of like, whoa, that's not that great, but it's better than this for sure. You know, decent record in his 10-round fight, not doing an awful record in a 6-round fight. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Anyways, Tank said that he's interested in a Jake Paul fight. Not that he's interested, but he said that it's time Jake Paul fights a real fighter like me, which I don't know if Tank's just talking, but Tank is also, I think, literally like 70, 80 pounds lighter than Jake Paul, where, I mean, Tank honestly probably beats him just because he's that good, but it just doesn't make any sense to be even talking about that. It just makes no sense at all. Armin Sarukian and Michael Chandler, I don't know how official this is, but it's close to being finalized for UFC 314. I can't wait for 314 to get announced because we are hearing of so many incredible matchups that at this rate, this fight is going to be on the prelims. With how many fights I'm hearing are on this April Miami card, it's ridiculous. I can't even remember. I can't keep track because every week there's something new that I'm like, wow, really? So really excited. What is official is Alexa Grasso versus Natalie Silva, UFC 315, a top 5 match weight at flyweight. You know, pretty good fight. Interesting that Alexa Grasso is returning on this card. I believe Shevchenko is supposed to be in the co-main event against Fiorat. I'm not sure how to say it. In a title fight. This will be in Montreal. So interesting if they are returning on the same card. Good to see that Grasso is going to keep on, getting right back out there. So excited. That's all the news I have for today. You know, I'm going to do another episode on Thursday. That'll be episode 19 where we're going to talk about the huge Riyadh season card. I cannot wait for this card. It's going to be incredible. The last crescendo. Let's just run through it. You got main event, Artur Beterbiev, Dmitry Bivol 2 for the undisputed light heavyweight championship. You know, I'm not going to say my predictions right now because that'll come on Thursday's episode, but brilliant 50-50 fight. The first one was awesome. I think this one will be even better. You know, both men know how to improve and are going to go out there, and they're going to try and do more than they did last time. So I'm super excited. Co-main event, Daniel Dubois, Joseph Parker. These are number 2 and 3 in the heavyweight division, no matter what way you put it. IBF World Championship on the line. It's going to be absolute carnage. I don't know if this one's going the distance, but it's going to be awesome. You got Shakur Stevenson, who meant to fight Floyd Schofield. Floyd Schofield now out. They're looking for a replacement opponent, but he'll still be fighting. He's still a generational talent. He is so good. He's so smooth and defensive. And, you know, I mean, you can't land a shot on him. So excited to see him perform. Hamza Shiraz challenges Carlos Adames for the WBC middleweight world title. Brilliant, brilliant fight. Glad that Shiraz is getting his world title shot. And Adames is a very good champion. So excited to see how this one goes. You know, I mean, should Shiraz win this one, he's got huge fights ahead of him. Potentially a Eubank and then Canelo situation. So it's crazy. Then you've got Virgil Ortiz Jr. versus Israel Madrimov at 154 pounds for the WBC interim title. This may be the best fight on the card. I'm not kidding. It is probably the closest one. It's hardest to call. It is straight 50-50. I cannot wait. I can't wait to see this one go down. It's going to be awesome. Zhilei Zhang and Ajit Kabayel, also two top 10 heavyweights. Again, another 50-50 fight. They've fought for the WBC interim heavyweight title. I don't know who wins this one. You've got Zhang, who's been in, you know, okay form, but he's one of the most destructive and dangerous and strong heavyweights out there. You got Ajit Kabayel, who's just the upset king, upset Makhmudov, upset Sanchez. Is Zhang next? I cannot wait to see this one. It's going to be awesome. And then opening the card, Callum Smith challenges Joshua Buatsi for his WBO interim light heavyweight strap. Very, very good domestic dust-up for the UK fans. This is a really, really good fight. You know, Smith is a former world champion. He's only ever lost to Canelo and Artur Beterbiev. That is very elite roster. Then you've got Buatsi, who's had some really good wins recently. Seems like he's at the very top of light heavyweight division, right under the four kings of this division, I guess you could say. Again, very good fight. This card is something special. I can't wait. It all goes down Saturday. We're going to do a big episode on Thursday, a special previewing it. So I'll see you then. Thanks for listening. Peace out.